Ordinary Vegan is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people get special life insurance rates. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people, including runners, cyclists, strength trainers, and vegans. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/ordinaryvegan or mention the promo code ordinaryvegan when you talk to a Health IQ agent.
You're listening to the Ordinary Vegan Podcast, where we teach you everything you need to know about adopting a plant-based diet full or part-time. Our goal is to empower you to live a long and healthy life. You can find today's show at ordinaryvegan.net or on iTunes. If you have any questions, please send an email to questions@ordinaryvegan.net.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Ordinary Vegan Podcast, number 29. If we haven't met, my name is Nancy Monturi, and my number one mission in life is to keep you as healthy as possible. And I do this by advocating a healthy, plant-based diet that includes grains, legumes like lentils and beans, vegetables, fruit, and healthy fats like nuts and seeds. It excludes all meat, eggs, and dairy. I created this podcast to encourage you, serve you, educate you, and support you every step of the way. Because a plant-based diet is not only the best choice for a long and healthy life, it is also the best choice for a healthy planet and a way to protect animals who have been bred into existence to suffer on factory farms. If you're just getting started on a plant-based diet, I highly recommend that you listen to podcast number one, Getting Started on a Plant-Based Diet, and podcast number 10, How to Get Optimal Nutrition on a Plant-Based Diet. I am very honored to serve you, and thank you so much for all the love and support you give me. I honestly can't thank you enough. Now, let's talk about today's podcast. They say the secret to happiness is helping others. If that is true, Dr. Michael Greger must be one of the happiest men in the world. The lengths that he goes to in order to help people understand the connection between nutrition and chronic disease is unrivaled. If you're not familiar with Dr. Michael Greger, here is some background. Dr. Greger is a graduate of Cornell and Tufts University School of Medicine and has been published in a vast amount of scientific journals. He has also testified before Congress and was an expert witness in the infamous Oprah Winfrey meat defamation lawsuit. In his downtime, he can be found constructing policy initiatives as Director of Public Health and Animal Agriculture for the Humane Society. He also wrote a best-selling book called How Not to Die, which explains why the top 15 causes of death in the USA can be treated, prevented, and even reversed with plant-based nutrition. He runs the popular website nutritionfacts.org, a nonprofit, science-based public service that provides free daily videos and articles on the latest in nutrition research. And later this month, he will be releasing yet another book called How Not to Die Cookbook, which has already been called the best cookbook of the year by the New York Times. And oh, by the way, 100% of fees and proceeds he receives from speaking and his book sales are donated to the nonprofit nutritionfacts.org. A powerful testament to Dr. Greger's love of helping people get well. And obviously, Dr. Greger is a very busy man, so I felt honored that he took some time to stop by the Ordinary Vegan Podcast. So here we go, my interview with Dr. Michael Greger. And since we will have some extra time at the end and with the holidays coming up, I wanted to make sure I shared my favorite vegan gravy recipe, so stay tuned following the interview. Hi, Dr. Greger, and welcome to the Ordinary Vegan Podcast.
I'm honored to be here.
Before we get started, I wanted to say congratulations on your instant New York Times best-selling book, How Not to Die.
Why, thank you so much. Hopefully we'll do the same with the How Not to Die cookbook out December 5th.
And I heard that you already got an amazing review in the New York Times. Do you want to mention that?
New York Times Review of Books calls it their favorite cookbook of the season. How cool is that? Then they go on to diss the mac and cheese recipe. But still, it's their favorite cookbook. Very excited.
I'm so excited for you. Well, in your book, How Not to Die, you examine the 15 top causes of death in America and how to treat, prevent, and even reverse those diseases with nutrition. So I was hoping we could talk about some of those chronic diseases that don't often get discussed and some of your simple food remedies. So can we start with Parkinson's disease, the number 15 cause of death in the United States? Because new findings from Columbia University last June suggest that Parkinson's disease may be an autoimmune disorder. And what do you think of that latest study? And can we talk about autoimmune disease in general and the role diet plays?
Happy to talk about autoimmune disease in general. Happy to talk about Parkinson's disease, but not aware of the new study. Was that on human beings?
Yes, it was. They studied post-mortem brain tissue samples and discovered that dopamine-prodding neurons do display antigens, and the team conducted blood tests to reveal that people with Parkinson's show an immune response to those antigens, while people who don't have the condition do not. So you don't have to discuss that. Can we talk about autoimmune disease and diet?
Right. So, I mean, the studies like that showing antibodies to, like, for example, probably alpha-synuclein, which is the protein that builds up in Parkinson's disease, you never know whether that is a cause or consequence. So the buildup of alpha-synuclein, the kind of abnormal protein, maybe that then triggers an immune response. So the disease leads to immune response rather than the immune response leading to disease. So you just have to be careful before making pronouncements that it is indeed not immune disease. But, sounds like the jury's still out on that. In terms of what one can do in terms of diet, I have videos about both dietary approaches towards reducing the risk of getting Parkinson's in the first place, as well as treating Parkinson's with diet. The most consistent dietary risk factor identified is dairy product consumption. Most studies have shown a link between dairy product consumption, milk drinking, and Parkinson's disease. And the question is why? Well, there are these, presumably because of neurotoxic chemicals that have been discovered not only in the specific regions of the brains of Parkinson's disease victims on autopsy, implicated in the disease, and in the milk supply. They're talking about pollutants like tetrahydroisoquinoline, which is what scientists give to primates in a laboratory trying to replicate Parkinson's disease, found mostly in cheese, actually. So there's been calls on the dairy industry to pretty please test their products. Of course, you could just not drink it, but then what would happen to your bones? And it turns out that is indeed a marketing ploy. The science does not suggest a beneficial effect of dairy product consumption on hip fracture risk, whether drinking as an adult, drinking as a teen, doesn't matter, doesn't work. In fact, it may actually increase risk of hip fracture. And I talk about this study out of Sweden that looked at more than 100,000 men and women, followed them for years, and showed that the milk drinking women had higher rates of death, meaning they lived significantly shorter lives, higher rates of heart disease, higher rates of cancer for each daily glass of milk consumption. Those women unfortunate enough to be drinking 3 glasses of cow's milk a day had nearly twice the risk of dying prematurely, and they had more fractures. I mean, more milk, more hip fractures. And milk drinking men also had higher rates of death. And so I would encourage people to stick to milk drinking within their species, and only during infancy. Milk is for babies.
Dr. Gregory, excuse me, but I hear a loud noise in the background.
That loud noise in the background is me on my treadmill.
I thought so. It's kind of loud, unfortunately.
I understand that, but unfortunately, if I turn it off, then I'm not getting any exercise.
Okay, I'm down with that. Okay, so in your book, How Not to Die, you said approximately 28,000 people a year die of prostate cancer, and it is the third leading cause of cancer death behind lung cancer and colorectal cancer. Can we discuss the causes and risk factors of this cancer, and do you believe that prostate cancer can be prevented?
Even better than prevented, how about reverse? So Dr. Dean Ornish, after proving that you could take the number one killer of men and women, heart disease, and reverse disease, open up arteries without drugs, without surgery, just a plant-based lifestyle program, then he, after conquering killer number one, he moved on to killer number two, cancer. Took men with early stage prostate cancer, put them on the same kind of plant-based diet and lifestyle program that reversed heart disease, and was able to reverse the progression of early stage prostate cancer as well, meaning that their PSA levels dropped, suggesting a shrinkage of their tumors, as well as the control group where the PSA levels continued to climb. First time ever showing this kind of cancer reversal through diet and lifestyle alone. Very exciting. In fact, when they actually took biopsies of the prostate tissues, they could show these epigenetic changes, meaning this healthy diet and lifestyle turned on cancer-fighting genes, turned off cancer-promoting genes. In fact, hundreds of genes were changed just by simple changes in diet and lifestyle. More recently, I did some videos on dietary changes affecting even metastatic advanced cancer cases as well, and so that's all good news that we have tremendous power over our health, destiny, and longevity. The vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a plant-based diet and other healthy lifestyle behaviors.
The 13th cause of mortality is suicide. You recently published a video about the connection between fish consumption and suicide. Can you explain that?
You gotta go to the video. I can bring it up and peek at the transcript here. The nice thing, see now, so I've done literally thousands of videos now. and the reason I do that is I can brain dump all this research into the world so millions of people can see it, and then I can move on to the next topic. Here what I have now, the video is called Fish Consumption and Suicide, and let's see what it says. So it looks like there was a the two big Harvard cohort studies, presumably the health professional study and then a Harvard nurses health study. Hundreds of thousands followed for up to 20 years. No evidence taking fish oil or eating fish lowered the risk of suicide, with a trend towards even higher suicide mortality among fish eaters. What about for the treatment of depression? Unfortunately, fish oil did not appear more effective than sugar pills. And so that was based on a meta-analysis of all the trials put together. And so, it turns out that nearly all the treatment efficacy observed in the public's literature may be attributable to publication bias, meaning that the trials that showed no benefit tend to get quietly shelved. And so all we see is the bunch of positive studies, and the negative ones were buried. And so that may explain the earlier protective association, but unfortunately seems to be lost. Similar to what one sees with fish oil, fish consumption, and heart disease. The original DART trial suggested benefit, but since then, the same researchers, larger group of folks in the DART2 trial, found actually made things worse, and he put all the studies together, no benefit, cardiovascular benefit from taking fish oil or giving people advice to eat fatty fish. Not to say long-chain omega-3 fatty acids aren't important for brain health, but one should get them from pollutant-free sources like microalgae or yeast-based sources. I would suggest 250 milligrams of a long-chain pollutant-free omega-3s like DHA and EPA, as long as, of course, making sure everyone gets their B12.
And well, in your book, How Not to Die, what did you how did you connect diet to suicide?
Oh, well, I mean, so if you look at mood, so if you, for example, you compare people eating plant-based diets to general population, only have about half the levels of stress, anxiety, depression. But this is a cross-sectional study. What you want to do is you put it to the test where you change people's diet, see what happens. And so that's what researchers did at the University of Arizona. What we think is this arachidonic acid, this long-chain inflammatory omega-6 fatty acid, found in animal products, predominantly eggs and chicken. So what they did is they took a group of folks eating the standard American diet, removed eggs, removed chicken, removed other meat from people's diets, and got a significant improvement in mood within just 2 weeks. So what they think is happening is that this arachidonic acid was causing neuroinflammation. We may be able to clear that inflammation from our brains in as few as 2 weeks by cutting down the consumption of eggs, chicken, and other meat. And so that's you know, we've long known that other lifestyle behaviors like exercise can improve mood, but the fact that diet can do it within just 2 weeks is pretty exciting.
The number 12 cause of death is breast cancer. The number one question I receive about food and breast cancer is about soy foods. Healthy or not?
Soy foods are super healthy. Soy is misunderstood. People don't understand there's two types of estrogen receptors in the body, alpha and beta. The phytoestrogens in soy bind to beta receptors, where our own estrogen binds preferentially to alpha receptors. So the effect of soy on different tissues depends on the ratio of these two different receptors. So estrogen has positive effects on some tissues, negative effects on others. So, for example, estrogen is important for bone health, but bad for breasts health in terms of increasing risk of breast cancer. So ideally, we'd have some kind of selective estrogen receptor modulator that has estrogenic effects in some tissues, but anti-estrogenic effects on others. And that's exactly what soy phytoestrogens are. Soy appears to lower breast cancer risk and anti-estrogenic effect, at the same time reducing menopausal hot flash symptoms. That's a pro-estrogenic effect. So with soy, you get the best of both worlds. So we should be eating legumes, soy or other beans, chickpeas or lentils every single day. It's one of my daily dozen foods. I encourage people to get into their daily diet.
Well, how come we got so lost? Why do people connect soy with breast cancer?
Well, because there's the soy has phytoestrogens, which has the word estrogen in it, and we know there's estrogen receptor positive breast cancer that thrives, that grows on estrogen. So it kind of makes, you know, so they just kind of say, oh, well, we don't want to have anything estrogenic, but don't realize soy actually has anti-estrogenic effects in breast tissue. There have been 5 studies so far involving thousands of breast cancer survivors, and those women that eat soy with breast cancer live significantly longer, have lower recurrence rates, meaning lowers their risk of breast cancer coming back. And so women with breast cancer, whether they're on tamoxifen or not, whether they have estrogen receptor positive breast cancer or not, should be encouraged to eat soy, not only to prevent cancer in the first place, particularly during adolescence, where you get most of the benefit, or after breast cancer. And the healthiest soy foods are whole soy foods, so like edamame, for example, soybeans in the can, or tempeh are all good whole soy foods.
Okay, now I want to jump to the number 4 leading causes of death and one of the saddest progressive diseases. It's Alzheimer's disease.
4 million Americans affected. You know, 20 years ago, wasn't even in the top 10 leading cause of death. According to the latest dietary guidelines for the prevention of Alzheimer's, we should Cutting down our consumption of meat, dairy, and junk, and increasing our consumption of fruits and vegetables and legumes and whole grains. And this is based on data going back decades now to the original Adventist study, showed that those who eat meat, red meat, white meat, doesn't matter, between 2 to 3 times the risk of becoming demented later in life, and the longer one eats healthy, the lower one's risk appears to fall. Now, that was for all dementia, not just Alzheimer's. But definitely eating healthier is good for the brain as well as the body.
I remember watching a video on nutritionfacts.org about preventing brain loss with B vitamins. And I'm assuming you mean B vitamins in whole plant-based foods. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I got to go back and do my searching again.
I'm sorry.
No problem. I mean, all these videos are online. Of course, everything is online for free, all my videos. And so this is a video called Preventing Brain Loss with B Vitamins? Video went up July 15th, 2015. You can check it out. And what does it say? Let's click on a little transcript here. I was talking about a double-blind randomized controlled trial looking at homocysteine lowering with B vitamins. This was done with supplemental B vitamins, folate, B12, B6, in pill form. Tried giving people B vitamins 2 years, found it markedly slowed the rate at which people's brains were shrinking. Our brains shrink, actually, as we age, something called brain atrophy. Those with high homocysteine levels, their brain shrinkage was cut in half, and that's typically because so people have high homocysteine, it's detoxified using a couple mechanisms in the body. One uses vitamin B12, another uses folate. So most people have high homocysteine levels, which is a toxin in our body because they're not getting enough folate, which is found in beans and greens. But people eating healthy diets, plant-based diets, can get lots of folate in their diet. But what they're missing, if they're not supplementing with vitamin B12 or eating B12 fortified foods, is they have high homocysteine levels because they're not getting enough B12. And so it's critically important that anyone eating a plant-based diet get enough vitamin B12, and then they take advantage of one of their plant-based benefits, which is having lots of folate, such that their homocysteine levels should drop, and it should reduce their risk of the consequences.
Can we jump to autism and diet? Do you believe, based on the studies that you've seen, do you believe a gluten-free, casein-free diet can improve behavioral symptoms in children with autism?
Failed. So the longest running randomized controlled blinded trial of gluten and casein-free diets for autism failed to improve behavioral symptoms. And so there were some really exciting case reports, some early uncontrolled studies or unblinded studies, but unfortunately it doesn't seem to help. What does help, though, is broccoli sprouts, sulforaphane, and so you can check out my video on the best food for autism, which, spoiler alert, is broccoli, or more specifically broccoli sprouts.
I also wanted to ask you what you thought of the recent report making the news that the new hypertension guidelines have been lowered to 130 over 80 rather than 140 over 90, which means they are recommending in some patients even medication at 130 over 80 blood pressure, which means now half of all Americans now have high blood pressure. What do you think of that?
It's actually much more. So ideal blood pressure is actually 110 over 70. If we really want to talk about ideal blood pressure, meaning no benefit from reducing it lower blood pressure, then 96% of Americans have high blood pressure, and the only people that don't are the 4% who are eating strictly plant-based diets. So the average blood pressure of those eating healthy, whole food, plant-based diets is right on the money, 110 over 70. Anyone eating any other kind of diet, whether it's some junky processed vegan diet with lots of sodium or people are including animal products in their diet, their blood pressure is going to be high, and that's the number one risk factor for death on the planet Earth. encourage people to center their diets around whole plant foods, cut out added salt rather than going on blood pressure medications. But I absolutely agree. It's a critical public health crisis. And so I'm glad they're certainly raising awareness about it. But of course, they have the wrong treatment in mind. We need to treat the cause. And the cause is not blood pressure pill deficiencies. The cause is our miserable diet.
I do hear from a lot of people who tell me that they are on a very clean plant-based diet and their blood pressure is not getting real low, you know?
Then they got to cut out the salt, cut out the sodium, cut out the processed food. And if they're still not doing good, then they have to add ground flax seeds to the diet and they have to start drinking hibiscus tea.
Yes, I love hibiscus tea.
Wonderful.
Okay, you've done a lot of videos on arsenic, which got on my radar. Is arsenic something we need to worry about?
If you eat rice every day, it is. And so I encourage people to diversify their grains and fall in love with quinoa and other non-rice grains until the rice industry cleans up its act.
And is that just for white rice or brown rice or?
For all rice. There are certainly there are some varieties of rice that are lower in arsenic, certainly ways you can cook rice, and I talk about in videos about all the ways you can prepare rice to cut down arsenic levels. So, for example, you boil rice like pasta in an excess of water, 10-to-1 water-to-rice ratio, and then you use a colander. And I talk about the nutrient losses, but I talk about even more importantly the arsenic losses. And so all the ways you can you mediate the effects, but the most important way to reduce arsenic exposure is to reduce your rice exposure, unfortunately, at this point.
Okay, yeah, you are famous not only for your important videos about combating diseases with food, but also your more light and funny videos about common foods like chocolate, apple cider vinegar, club soda. If you had to choose one unusual common food to eat on a daily level for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
Well, I think uncommon for many people is turmeric. So I recommend part of my daily dozen is a quarter teaspoon of the yellow spice turmeric, that which makes kind of curry powder yellow. There's more than 50 clinical trials so far. There's tested turmeric against a variety of diseases, lung disease, brain disease, variety of cancers. It's been shown to make colon polyps disappear, speed recovery after surgery, effectively treat rheumatoid arthritis better than the leading drug. Also appears effective in treating osteoarthritis, other inflammatory conditions such as lupus, inflammatory bowel disease. I recommend a quarter teaspoon of turmeric a day. And unfortunately, it's 3:30. I've got to run.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Greger, so much. It's been such an honor to have you here. And I just appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man.
Happy to help out. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Dr. Greger is a man on the move, doing extraordinary things, and I am grateful that he stopped by today. Before I go into the ordinary vegan kitchen to make my favorite vegan gravy, I wanted to spend a few moments telling you about my new sponsor. So many people reach out to me about sponsoring, but many of those people want me to advertise products that don't fit our healthy lifestyle here on Ordinary Vegan. So when Health IQ reached out to me, I did some research and thought this could be a really good fit for people with healthy lifestyles looking for life insurance. Here is what they do. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people, including runners, cyclists, strength trainers, and vegans. They are trusted by some of America's top athletic organizations, including the nonprofit Roadrunners Club of America, USA Triathlon, US Masters Swimming, and USA Weightlifting. And they have spent years gathering the science and data to prove that the health conscious deserve lower rates. It's like saving money by being a good driver. Health IQ gets you lower rates on your life insurance based on your lifestyle. Their mission is to improve the health of the world by celebrating the health conscious. Health IQ is another reason to keep eating your fruits, grains, lentils, and vegetables. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/ordinaryvegan or mention the promo code ordinaryvegan when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Now, let's go into Ordinary Vegan's kitchen and make my favorite vegan mushroom gravy. The best thing about this healthy gravy is that it has less fat and calories than the traditional version without sacrificing any of the taste. Here is what you need. A half cup of vegetable broth while sautéing, and then another 3 cups of vegetable broth, 1 cup of chopped white onion, 4 cloves of chopped garlic, 3 cups of chopped mushrooms. You can use any kind. I like portobello, white, and cremini. 1 teaspoon of poultry seasoning. Just an FYI, poultry seasoning doesn't have poultry in it. 2 tablespoons of finely chopped fresh thyme. 2 tablespoons of finely chopped fresh rosemary. 1/4 teaspoon of salt and 1/4 teaspoon of ground black pepper. 1/4 cup of dry red wine and 2 fresh sage leaves chopped. And for the flavor bomb, you will need 3 tablespoons of reduced sodium tamari, 3 tablespoons of nutritional yeast, 2 tablespoons of flour. If you want it gluten-free, use rice flour. So all you do is heat up the 1/2 cup of vegetable broth in a large sauté pan or soup pot. You add the onion and mushrooms and sauté for about 3 minutes. Then add the garlic and poultry seasoning and sauté until the onion is translucent, about another minute or two. Add the red wine and cook for another minute, stirring constantly. Then you just stir in the remaining 3 cups of vegetable broth and all the fresh herbs, salt, and ground black pepper. Bring that to a boil, reduce the heat, and simmer away. Meanwhile, in a small bowl, whisk together the tamari, nutritional yeast, and flour to make a thick paste. This is your flavor bomb. Add that mixture to the pan, whisking constantly to make sure the paste dissolves. Bring it to a boil again and boil for another minute, stirring constantly. Then you add the fresh chopped sage leaves and serve. Always taste and adjust seasonings. If you prefer it thicker, thicken it with 1 tablespoon of flour to 1 tablespoon of water to make a paste, and add that and just keep adding and whisking until you get your desired thickness. You can also puree the mixture for a smoother gravy. Hope you enjoy this delicious, healthy, vegan gravy alternative for the holidays. That is it for today's podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for being here today. And thanks for being part of our health and wellness community. I am here for you, and don't hesitate to ask me questions at nancy@ordinaryvegan.net. You can find all the show notes and the recipe for all my podcasts at ordinaryvegan.net/playlist. Please join our health and wellness community on Facebook, which is over 313,000 strong. And also, I do a cooking show every Friday on Facebook live at 3 p.m. Pacific time. Just go to facebook.com/ordinaryvegan. If you get a moment, please leave a comment or review on iTunes. If people enjoy the podcast, iTunes will give it a better position and expose it to more people. So thank you in advance if you have time. Wishing you a peaceful and compassionate week, and happy holidays to everyone who are celebrating. Till next time.
Thanks for joining our plant-based community today. Together, we can accomplish great things. Please subscribe so you don't miss any of Ordinary Vegan's recipes and plant-based tips. If you have any questions or feedback, email us at questions@ordinaryvegan.net. Until next time.